had stepped on something that wanted to be really big, with or without me. I've had experiences all the way from founding a company by myself with $0 right from this basement and going from like 0 customers to 1 customer to 20 customers to 100 customers, all the way to being part of a $2 billion launch at Microsoft when we did Bing, and literally every stage in between. Never in my whole life have I felt signal like I did with the Female Founders Alliance. It just wanted to be. And I was like, okay, what do you want to be?
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and leaders share their stories and their lessons from behind the scenes. If you like this show, then you'll love my short weekly email, the Pike Street Journal. Subscribe at psj.email. Each week I send some bonus nuggets from these interviews, stuff I get when the recorder's off, and some more insider takes on Seattle people and companies. That's psj.email. On this episode, I chatted with Leslie Feinzeig. She's the founder and CEO of the Female Founders Alliance, or FFA. They have an incredible mission, but it's also a business. She's an entrepreneur, she's a pragmatic capitalist, and a feminist. So she's not building a nonprofit, she's using her skills as a business leader to solve a big problem in the world. Leslie's lessons aren't just for female founders. I think anyone can learn from her story. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I'm here with the one, the only, Leslie Feinzeig. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you.
I'm really excited. I keep hearing good things about you from people.
They're all lies.
They're lies? I was going to ask you why that is, why you keep coming up.
I know. I'm just really, really good at making friends and influencing people. No, just kidding.
You read the book, the Carnegie book?
You know what? I have it like right behind me as we speak, but no, I have never read it.
It's worth the read. You'd probably like it, but you've been top of mind for a lot of my past guests as a person they admire, a person they look up to. So you must be doing something right.
I appreciate that. I think you've had some pretty amazing guests, and so that's very, very flattering, and I'm very grateful to hear it.
I know you've written a lot, you tweet, you have been on podcasts, so I encourage people to go like get the backstory, but I wanted to just dive right into the problem that you're solving and kind of hear that in your words.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think of the Female Founders Alliance as finding revenue in order to find a problem that has no revenue associated with it, right? Like, I'm trying to change the industry. I would love for, you know, when our daughters, our 4-year-old daughters graduate from college, I want them to have just as many role models that look like them as your son. I want them to be able to work for a female-founded company, to be able to solve problems that address the whole country. I want them to not, you know, get paid less, to not, you know, all of these things. I want them to not leave the tech industry at 3 times the rate of men. And that's what I'm trying to solve. And I'm trying to solve it from the top down by getting as many women-founded companies funded as possible. The startups of today are the large public companies of tomorrow. I did research a decade ago when I was in consulting. And the firm that I used to do consulting with has done more research since. And what they found is that the life cycle of companies is shortening, right? So like 20 years from now, more than half of the NASDAQ is going to be companies that don't exist yet. So just imagine that. Like if the companies that we create today, if these startups in our basements have really rich representation from the full world, the public companies 20 years from now are going to look like the rest of us. And that's really like, I want to change the top levels of leadership in a single generation. Now, the problem is there's no money to be made from early stage startups unless you invest in them, right? So what I've done with the Female Founders Alliance is kind of have this two-sided organization, which on the one hand is very mission-driven, and on the other hand figures out how to monetize it so that we can do this in the long haul and I can like pay a team and I can do it sustainably. That's kind of how I started. I was like, okay, who would give me money to keep doing what I'm doing? Like, where do I get some revenue? Who is willing to pay for something? Like, what do I have here that is of value that can turn into recurring revenue? And here we are a couple years later, and, you know, I'm certainly not like rolling in money, but I'm making payroll. You know, we have good runway, haven't had to rely on raising capital, and we're doing okay.
It's so interesting how you describe those two parts. Did you know when you started the community, and I know that you initially, it was just a Facebook group and then it grew and morphed. When you started that community, did you know that you would have the accelerator part ultimately? Was that a master plan?
No. Oh my God. No. Like, so first of all, like you said, I didn't. It's so funny because a lot of people ask you when you have the title founder, they're like, what's your founding story? How did you come up with the idea? Blah, blah, blah. I didn't come up with the idea. I founded the thing. I didn't make a business plan. I had no idea what I was. I just created a community because I needed somebody to turn on the light and like help me figure out what was happening in this very unique experience that I was going through. And so it was never strategic. Oh my God. I think back at like strategy class at business school, and I'm like, so I guess this is called emergent strategy, because I sure as hell have been pivoting my way through this entire thing. And it's just so funny. When I think about what FFA brings for people, I kind of felt in those very early days like I had stepped on something that wanted to be really big, with or without me. I've had experiences all the way from founding a company by myself with $0 right from this basement and going from like zero customers to one customer to 20 customers to 100 customers, all the way to being part of a $2 billion launch at Microsoft when we did Bing, and literally every stage in between. Never in my whole life have I felt signal like I did with the Female Founders Alliance. It just wanted to be. And I was like, okay, what do you want to be? Like, hey, FFA, what do you want to be when you grow up? I had such dramatic imposter syndrome that the first time that we did the accelerator, for months, I refused to call it an accelerator. And the first time it got called an accelerator, it was by GeekWire, not by me. I was like, okay, I guess they called it an accelerator. So now we run an accelerator. Like, if GeekWire said it, then it must be true. It was absolutely not like strategic. I've just sort of experimented, leaned into what works, experimented again, leaned into what works, all the way to where we are today.
It's so fascinating when you say you stepped on something big and that this, you've never experienced so much signal or pull from the market.
Yeah.
What did that look and feel like? How did that show up?
It showed up in people talking about it without me having to bring it up, right? Like, you were mentioning Liz Pierce earlier. Liz called me out 3 years ago at like some fireside chat when somebody interviewed her, and she talked about me, and I was like, holy crap, I'm nobody. Like, what did I do to deserve that? That is amazing. I must be doing something great. Like, things like that. It just felt, you know. And then there's the obvious, which is everybody wanted to be a part of it. And I'm like, hi, I'm sorry. What do you think you want to be a part of? Because there's nothing here. Like, this is a Facebook. Like, there's no money. There's no brand. There's no, like, certainly no strategy. There's no employees. There's no revenue. Like, what? So, like, exactly what do you think you're joining? Right? And it just felt that way. Like, I wrote a blog post that was kind of this, like, mission stating blog post, and GeekWire picked it up. This is early 2017. And then all of a sudden, like, everybody wanted to be part of this Facebook group. And I'm like, okay, but the problem is I don't know who you are. How do I fix that? And so I slapped an application form online, and I kept it to 10 questions because that's the only way that I could keep the type form free. And then like hundreds of people like applied through the website. I'm like, all right, okay, well, I guess this matters to people. We have since upgraded our type form account. I'm happy to report. So we ask a few more than 10 questions, but that's kind of what it felt like. It just felt like people are talking about you. People are feeling gratitude for what you're putting out. And it just kind of all surrounded me and felt like to this day, I feel like whatever it is what we're building, it just wants to be big. And my job is to get it there and then get out of the way.
So I'm sure you talk a lot about product market fit with the founders that you work with.
Yeah.
Do you think at that point you had product market fit and then it was just a matter of finding the right business model so you could sustain it? Like, what kind of was happening at that moment? I'm curious.
No, I think I had founder market fit because I didn't have a product. Yeah, so there was certainly something that people needed there, and in some way, I was very authentically creating it, but there was no product, and the product is something that I've been iterated on ever since.
Do you think you have the, and where's the product now today, or how do you describe the product?
Yeah, so we've come a long way since then.
Yeah.
So there's a community, which is kind of like the core asset for FFA and the core group of people that we want to help and encourage. And surrounding the community, and right now it's 1,500 venture scalable startups, which is crazy. I mean, that's just crazy because they're all women or non-binary CEOs and founders. That's nuts. Like, can you imagine it?
It's
Anyways,
incredible.
I know, I'm in awe of it. I just sent, like I said, my Q2 investor report this morning, and we had goosebumps reading it. We're like, especially now, because this year, my God, it just like this year has been, a lot to handle. So there's a community, and then we have a flywheel that is built around the community. And so when I started this, I knew that I had what I thought at the time was a large group of female-founded companies. It was like 100, and I thought like, who would pay me to keep doing what I'm doing? And what would they pay me for? And so initially, they were sponsorships. And I went out and just tried to see who wanted to like sponsor something like this. And it ended up being like local companies that have been super supportive since. I should actually call them out. Fuel Talent, which is Shauna Swerlin's recruiting company. She has been a sponsor and a friend from the start. And like, I'm so grateful to her. The other one is Michaela Kiner of Reverb. So this is people services for startups. And she has also like the two of them were the very first checks that I received in the mail. It was November 2017. And to this day, they're still sponsoring us every year. And I will never stop being grateful to both of them and sending them business. And then the partnerships kind of grew out from there. We no longer think of them as sponsorships, although some people do kind of, they'll sponsor a newsletter more like a traditional advertising business. So we have an audience to sell. But really, the bigger thing is we have a large community of startups that are going to grow. Right, not all of them, but a good number of them are going to grow. We have a bunch of partners and service providers that want access to early stage startups to sell their services, to sell their software, to fill their own corporate VC pipelines, right? So they're wanting to get involved with communities like mine. It's kind of the same reason why people partner with Techstars or people partner with 500 startups, except 100% of my pipeline is diverse. And then the third bucket in the flywheel are our investors and subject matter experts. We have angel investors, venture capital investors. They want deal flow. They want to improve their reputations. They want to kind of be in touch with the community. And some of them are super active with us, right? Like there's a core group of 25 investors in our investor circle who actively sponsor us, but the larger list is 400 venture capital funds from around the country. And finally, subject matter experts. So there's a lot of people out there that want to personally be involved with startups. Maybe they have expertise that they could bring as an advisor. Maybe they are board ready. Maybe they just want to mentor. Maybe they just want to support. And so they kind of come in and become subject matter experts and like mentor, sponsor, participate in one way or another. And all of these things together, it's like when each of these individual legs of the stool like become stronger, then the entire thing just flies.
That's awesome how it all like reinforces itself, like
Exactly.
each of those things. With the accelerator portion then, what got you into that part of the business, and how'd you end up adding that? Was it, I know you got it was very organic the way the community evolved and you had stepped on
Yeah.
something big, and then how'd you arrive at this idea of the accelerator and kind of turning
Oh,
into an
man.
investor?
Okay, so like frankly, I couldn't go to Y Combinator because I had a baby. And that just pissed me off. And so I made my own. That's it. That's exactly what happened. After that chip on the shoulder origin story, I came to understand and to learn that accelerators are actually not generally effective for female-founded companies. They tend to not do as well as the men. whether they are gender specific or open to anyone, women just don't tend to do as well. And so it's become more and more important to figure out how we can create an accelerator that actually helps these companies grow. And I don't know that we have the perfect formula, but we're certainly doing well. Like the two classes that we've run, the last class raised something like $4 to $6 million right out of the accelerator. And these are pre-seed companies, so they're raising like 500K at a time. So we're pretty proud of the success that those companies have had.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you see that? I mean, where might it be if you forecast 20 years forward and the NASDAQ has hopefully started to turn over and looks different than it does today? What do you think the role of FFA in the world looks like at that point?
You know, that's a great question. When I used to work in consulting years and years ago, right? I did a little bit of time at McKinsey & Company. I worked at a company called Innosight. Innosight was a Clayton Christensen consulting arm. And as a consultant, the partners used to tell us that if we were good at our jobs, we should be out of a job within 7 years. Because what you really want to do is you want to enable your client to learn how to do those things themselves. And then you'll go on to a different client and maybe a different group within the company. So it's not like you're going to shut down in 7 years, but like that client should graduate and be on their own in 7 years. And so honestly, on the mission side of FFA, if there was no need for us in 20 years, I would be pretty happy with that. I would write my book and I would go to the beach. Well, that's actually not true. I'd probably like start another company because I like kind of addicted to this stuff. But
yeah, I'm not like, sure you seem like a sit still kind of person.
But... yeah, certainly not a sit still kind of person. I mean, I would love for FFA to be put out of a job in terms of like achieving the vision of like the top leaders of the business world being more reflective of the world that they serve. I would love to achieve that within 20 years and then focus on something different. I know that a lot of people read into what I do and immediately make assumptions about who I am and why I do it. And yes, like there's certainly a lot attached to the fact that I am a woman and I am a feminist. And I believe that being a feminist means that you believe that all people have human rights, not that like some people are better than others. But the thing that most people don't understand is like, I actually just want to do my damn job. Like, I just want to start a company, grow it big, and exit it like Jeff Bezos did. And I don't want my gender to be a part of it. The problem is it just keeps getting in the way. And the first thing that felt amazing about the Female Founders Alliance is that when you got that group of us, that early group of us that were on the Facebook group those early days, and all of us were women and most of us were moms, and all of us were startup founders trying to raise venture capital, all of a sudden, we could just leave the whole gender thing aside and just be ourselves and just like do the work. And like, you cannot imagine how liberating that is after like having to lead with defending who you are at every step of the way. I just want to get my work done. Like, I love what I do.
Right. I mean, like anybody, right? Anybody exactly, who's like, passionate about their craft or building a business as an entrepreneur, we like want to go do the thing.
You just want to do the thing because it's fun. And like, I was born to do it. Like, I have never had more fun working at anything in my whole life. And that's what it feels like when you have product market fit.
Well, it's so clear to me from the outside that you are an entrepreneur and that like you are a company builder because, well, you could have done this just, you could have stopped at the community.
Yeah.
Right. Or yeah, you could have done a nonprofit, or you could have like, but you have this, like the pieces are kind of are building up as like these adjacencies and the flywheel. And it's like, oh, okay. You're actually taking a business entrepreneurial approach to solving this kind of bigger problem.
That's
right. World that's not just like a customer problem. Like it is a customer problem, but it's a bigger problem as well.
It's not, I mean, I found a customer problem so that I could keep doing what I wanted to do.
Right.
And yeah, I think, I mean, there's two reasons for that. One is, you're right, I am an entrepreneur. Like, this is fun. And it's just sort of who I am and what I do. The other part of it is I think that it's way more sustainable that way. I'm kind of like a pretty pragmatic capitalist in that sense. Like, I think that when you make someone successful at something, they will keep paying you to do it. And it's incredibly sanitizing to have revenue and have recurring revenue, because that means that you get to keep doing what you're doing, right? To this day, I cannot tell you how many people say, oh, you should just incorporate as a nonprofit and like a ton of people would donate to you. I'm like, I don't want you to donate to me. I'm not a charity. I'm not a charitable cause. There are real charitable causes in this world. I am a highly investable founder. You need to make a bet on me, not like give me charity. So I just believe that like a private sector approach, if I make a lot of people money and if I make a lot of people successful, I'll get to keep doing what I'm doing more sustainably.
I love that. You mentioned Y Combinator earlier, and I love the way that you said it about the frustration you had. But do you look at them or people like them as kind of the role model of, you know, at scale with the accelerator of what this could be? I mean, obviously they have now a lot of influence and a big place in the whole ecosystem. Is that who you look at as role models, or where do you look for role models since this is so, I guess, unique in how you're approaching it?
Yeah, I don't have one. I certainly look to Y Combinator for programming, for how they help companies accelerate. I wish that they would look up to me for different ways that I do that. And I say that with all the humility in the world, but I think that we can like create a better experience for the people that participate in our program. I think that there's multiple. I like look pretty far and wide for business model comparisons and for where I can take this business and like do well while doing good. You know, like it doesn't escape me that I like by not turning FFA into a venture funded startup itself, like I don't have an exit strategy for it. And I'm leaving, I can tell you, you probably know this, I'm leaving a lot of money on the table in terms of how much I could be making elsewhere. And so I want to have an exit strategy, not for FFA, but I want to have an ability to like create wealth out of what I'm doing. And that's something that we're working on. So yeah, I there's multiple models out there. In terms of the accelerator itself, I don't know that accelerators are the way that you solve this. It is one way that you solve this. I think for us, it's like too early to say this is the thing that we're going to keep doing forever. I think it solves a problem, but it creates other problems too. And so, yeah, we're going to keep iterating on it. And whether it's called an accelerator or something else, I don't know that right now.
That makes sense. Just thinking about where you came from. I didn't know that before this conversation, but knowing how it's been iterative and you see these different pieces of the flywheel, and that's one component or one approach that you're taking now toward this bigger problem, it totally makes sense that while the accelerator might be important now, it might not be the whole thing in the future.
Yeah. And when you think of like Y Combinator, I mean, how many companies make it into Y Combinator these days, right? Like there are hundreds. It's sort of like the new business school. It's really about just like the stamp that you get by making it in there. And really, Y Combinator is only really Y Combinator for like a fraction of the companies that go through the cohort, right? The ones that get really hot. The rest of the companies are not going to have that like hype effect and raise the giant rounds immediately out of there. But there's 100 companies underneath that outlier that don't raise. And I can tell you the thing that shocked the bejesus out of me, we had multiple Y Combinator graduates apply to our accelerator last year. And we were like, what? Why? Like, seriously, what do you think I can do for you? If Y Combinator didn't do it, like, what do you think I can do? I don't know. And it's because they felt like they were not supported and because, like, they didn't have that kind of experience where somebody was going to stick around for them throughout the entire thing because it's just such a large program. So I don't know that accelerators at scale do as well as we want them to. And we'll see. I mean, we're certainly doing it again this year. There's a lot of people waiting for, things are running a little late because of COVID, but like I'm getting a ton of emails in my inbox like, hey, are applications open? Because like by this time last year, applications were already closed and we haven't even opened them this time around. So by the time the podcast is out, I'm guessing applications will be open. So I should probably just record, applications are now open. But they're not. They will be in a few weeks.
We'll edit in the right answer to that based on the date.
That's right. That's exactly. That's perfect. Go to www.femalefounders.org.
I love learning about the evolution. And I have to think there's a lot of lessons that other founders can generalize from this of like stepping on a big problem, even if you don't exactly know the shape of it. Do you share your story with the people in the community and do they find it helpful in, you know, particularly very mission-driven founders, or is it just too far off field from the typical, like, I need to solve a business problem?
I don't know. I bring other speakers to the community. I don't like to make it about me.
Yeah.
When I started this thing, I was nobody. I could not get a response from most VCs, like an email response. And I think that there's something really, really powerful to creating a community where the leader is just like, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing either. Let's figure it out together. I got this. You got this. We got each other. I'm not talking down to them. I'm looking at them at eye level and going on the journey at the same time. And I think that that's really, really powerful because I hate the feeling of being patted on the head. Like, I hate the feeling of being talked down to. Like, you know, the journey itself is like hard enough without having these unrealistic expectations set on top of you by your leader.
And you're in the trenches doing the same, trying to achieve 100%. The same thing as the people, right? Very much so. You're grinding and trying to build your business. What kind of feedback have you gotten from the people in the community on that, I guess, extremely authentic approach that you have?
I mean, for the most part, people love our community. Yeah, like for the most part, it's really a strength. I don't know, what feedback have I gotten from the community for, like, it's generally like gratitude for doing something that matters to them. There's always the people that like you're not doing enough for their liking, and then it's sort of like you have to remind them, hey, you're not actually paying for this, right? Like, meanwhile, I'm here giving up, you know, all those foregone earnings that could go to my daughter's college education in 20 years, and like, no, I'm not here to do your personal PR. But for the most part, people are just really grateful to be a part of it. And I always, always get like, you know, when you go on stage and like you're in a, I don't actually like to do panels all that often, but like when I do, or like you're interviewed on stage and then afterwards, without fail, every single time somebody from the audience comes and says, oh, Leslie, you're so authentic. And I'm just like, uh-oh. Like, what did I say? Like, exactly what embarrassing thing did I just reveal about myself while on stage? Like, what do you mean exactly with, like, but yeah, I mean, it's just.
What comes next in that conversation when they say you're so authentic? What like comes next?
A very awkward smile and a thank you. Great. I mean, what else are you going to be, right?
Is it that simple? Is it just that's the only thing to be, or like people do see you that way, right? As being very authentic, and we talked about it as kind of a strength.
Yeah, I think that I'm a really, like, I don't have a poker face to speak of. You can probably tell by looking at me on the Zoom. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I also, at some point, and I think it was more in the context of dating than it was in the context of business. So this is like a lesson from 15 years ago. I just realized, it was probably after I met my now husband. You know, when you get to the point where you realize, like, if I keep trying to be someone I'm not, they're never going to get to know who I am. And like, hey, by the way, trying to like be this perfect person all the time and like play acting almost, it's actually really draining. You get this much energy in your life and you're going to spend it pretending to be something you're not. It's just like, it's not good ROI for me on my energy. And you know, I just made this decision with Micah that he's going to stick around. Eventually one day I'm going to wake up a little too tired to like be perfect and like wake up with the perfect hair. And then he's going to know what he really married. And I really don't want him to be surprised. Right. So really what I should do is just be myself, like aggressively myself, and let the cards fall where they may. And then I've just carried that into today. Now, you know, obviously I say this now from a place of privilege because it's a lot easier for me to be authentic now that I'm like well-respected, right? Like it's very easy for me to take a baby to an investor meeting when they're already impressed with what I've done. This is not something that I could have done 5 years ago. And in fact, it's probably why I had so much trouble fundraising for my first company and why I started the Female Founders Alliance in the first place, because my authenticity led people to read a lot into who they thought I was, and they didn't expect that I, on top of being a mom and emotional and like whatever else, you know, that authenticity shows you, I'm also really freaking determined. And like, I really like to prove people wrong. Like, I really don't like to let things get in my way. And I can sometimes be really fearless. And you don't see that when you see the mom on stage. But now, like, fast forward five years, I think, like, I get to be aggressively myself all the time. The past 6 months that we've been on COVID, like, you know, my daughters have joined 2/3 of my board meetings. Like, it just is what it is.
I'm in a similar boat here about every time I have a big presentation, one of the kids is like running melts behind down. The Zoom, right?
Amen.
I love that. Yeah. Has that sort of philosophy on being yourself, being authentic, is that something you've coached other founders on? And what do you say to them when they maybe don't have the credibility or aren't sure if they can really be themselves? Like, is that something that others struggle with, or how should they think about it?
I don't know that I coach people on doing it, because I think that when someone is not authentic, that's not feedback that I feel comfortable giving. Mm. That's just the reality of it. When I think of a really strong founder, like if I'm evaluating a company for the accelerator, if I'm going to make an angel investment, like I am looking for a combination of like high confidence and high humility. And it is possible to be both. And I actually think that like true authenticity takes a lot of confidence. And so when people are not super authentic, I tend to think that that's probably a lack of confidence underneath it. And it's just not something that you can just say to their face unless you have like a really good relationship with them. So that the easier thing to do is to talk about it in one-to-many scenarios where people can kind of choose to take the lesson or not. And then if I'm like in a one-on-one mentoring situation, then I think it's more about like, okay, so how do we empower you to be authentic while also showing your results, right? Because like, I think one of the things that makes it very easy to be authentic is to kill it, right? Like to like show growth. And that just speaks for itself. And that's why I can do what I do today, because like what I built speaks for itself.
I love that impossible paradox of humility and confidence too.
Totally.
That you look for. But authenticity in that equation, like is interesting. I hadn't heard it said that way, so I'm putting that in my notes for today at least.
I'll make you a fortune cookie.
love it. Okay, let's wrap this up with the supersonic six.
All right, let's do this.
So these are the rapid fire round. I have six questions, as you might have imagined from the supersonic six. Try to keep it a little corny. So
I've been watching the Michael Jordan documentary, and so I have not lived in Seattle long enough to understand what supersonics means, but after watching that documentary, I now know.
Perfect timing. I'm so glad we did this now. So number one, who's one Seattle business leader that you're following or learning from right now?
I am learning a lot from Betty Fujikado. Betty is the co-founder of a very well-known, very well-loved advertising agency locally. They've worked with the Seattle Mariners, they've worked with the Seattle Aquarium, the Girl Scouts, a whole bunch of the brands that you know and love are their work. Betty has been a friend, mentor of mine, a sponsor to the Female Founders Alliance for about a year. And she's had such a long career, is kind of eyeing retirement or what comes next. And I've had the privilege of learning from her on a more private, personal mentoring kind of scenario. And it's just been a joy. So I'll give a call out to her.
Number two, what's one Seattle company that you're following or learning from right now?
You know, this is a really hard one because there are so many cool companies out there. But I'll tell you which one I have name dropped like five times this week. Weekdays. Shauna Causey. Not only do I have super high respect for her as a human and as a founder, I think that the space they are in is really hard, and hard in the way that like I really want somebody to solve it. But the reason that she's top of mind right now is because they have pivoted. I don't know if it's a pivot, actually. This is looking from the outside in, but they've started offering to help parents connect into micro schools And, you know, you and I are talking a day after Seattle Public Schools announced that they are not going to be opening physically. I know. I'm so sorry. But see, like, it's top of mind for all of us. And those parents that have kids in daycare, like I do, are not as affected by this. But the parents that have kids in grade school or K through 12 are like super affected by this, and everybody's scrambling to figure out what to do. And all of a sudden, Shauna has been like doing this work for over a year and is like really well prepared to help them. And so, like, I have referred that company like 5 times this week alone. And I would love nothing more than to see that company thrive.
We need that right now. Amen. Days, oh, all of us parents. Parents, we feel you. Number three, what's one thing that Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
More founders investing in other founders. Cool. Very simple.
Number four, what's one piece of advice you'd give your 20-year-old self?
This is the very personal one, but I would tell myself to not stop dancing. I used to be a professional dancer. I used to teach, and I got really busy. And these days I'm like, oh man, I really wish I could just go to dance class and feel like as good and as easy as it used to, rather than like dancing by myself in the living room. But like, the bigger thing is, if there's a thing that brings you joy when you're 20, chances are it'll still bring you joy when you're 40. So don't stop doing it.
Number five, what surprised you the most about building your business so far?
I think the thing that has been most surprising is how much like the quality of your experience depends on the people that you bring on board. And it just changes the bar on hiring so hard, because all of a sudden it's like not just about the success of your business, but it's about whether you're still having a good time doing it. And I had never thought of it that way. And for me, you know, what becomes really, really hard is like, my company becomes my family, and like, it's hard for me to separate like how much I love those guys and how grateful I am for my team and for everything they do. And to separate that from like, we have to make payroll, like, you know, we have to deliver, you know, I'm not their mom. I'm like barely their CEO. I half the time don't know what I'm doing either, right? Like, there's that authenticity that I promised. So I think that's it. It's like the hiring part is not just hard because you need talent and you need to like pay them whatever you can pay them. It's because you actually really want to surround yourself with nice people and like not screw up the job of like making them successful and happy.
So good. Yeah. I mean, it's not true, right? Like, right. I mean, it's, everybody talks about like, if you want to get where you want to go, you need the right people on the bus. But like, it's so true. The quality of the experience is just entirely dictated by who you're with.
Entirely. I love that way of saying it. And you're never going to get the time back, right? Like, maybe you'll get an exit out of it, but you're never going to get your 30s again. You're never going to get your 40s again.
Yeah.
Like, you get one.
Those have an expiration date for sure.
Yeah.
Number six, what can this community do to help you? Is there a job post, an event? Is there something you want people to go look at or put their attention on or take action on?
You know, we always welcome, let's say, three things. So if you know women or non-binary founders that don't have a community and are not already part of FFA, send them our way. You know, what we do, they don't have to pay for being a part of our community. They just like, they can give back when they're big and famous and rich. So that's one. Two is, I want everybody to invest more. And I want them to come to us when they want to invest, and we'll like hook you up with good companies. So consider becoming an angel investor if you're already somebody that qualifies as accredited. Even 5,000 at a time, you can make a difference, and you can like create a really cool ecosystem here in Seattle.
Love it. Thank you for being on the show. This has been awesome.
Thank you for having me. That was really fun.
Is it on? I think it's on. Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.